Chapter 24. A marriage contract. There is excitement in the Veneering mansion. The mature young lady is going to be married, powder and all, to the mature young gentleman, and she is to be married from the Veneering house, and the Veneerings are to give the breakfast. The analytical, who objects as a matter of principle to everything that occurs on the premises, necessarily objects to the match. But his consent has been dispensed with, and a spring van is delivering its load of greenhouse plants at the door, in order that tomorrow's feast may be crowned with flowers. The mature young lady is a lady of property. The mature young gentleman is a gentleman of property. He invests his property. He goes, in a condescending amateurish way, into the city, attends meetings of directors, and has to do with traffic in shares. As is well known to the wise in their generation, traffic in shares is the one thing to have to do with in this world. Have no antecedents, no established character, no cultivation, no ideas, no manners. Have shares. Have shares enough to be on boards of direction in capital letters, oscillate on mysterious business between London and Paris, and be great. Where does he come from? Shares. Where is he going to? Shares. What are his tastes? Shares. Has he any principles? Shares. What squeezes him into Parliament? Shares. Perhaps he never of himself achieved success in anything, never originated anything, never produced anything? Sufficient answer to all. Shares. Oh mighty shares! To set those blaring images so high, and to cause a smaller vermin, as under the influence of henbane or opium, to cry out, night and day, relieve us of our money, scatter it for us, buy us and sell us, ruin us, only we beseech ye take rank among the powers of the earth, and fatten on us. While the loves and graces have been preparing this torch for Hymen, which is to be kindled tomorrow, Mr. Twemlow has suffered much in his mind. It would seem that both the mature young lady and the mature young gentleman must indubitably be Veneering's oldest friends. Wards of his, perhaps? Yet that can scarcely be, for they are older than himself. Veneering has been in their confidence throughout, and has done much to lure them to the altar. He has mentioned to Twemlow how he said to Mrs. Veneering, Anastasia, this must be a match. Apostrophe he has mentioned to Twemlow, how he regards Sophronia Akersham, the mature young lady, in the light of a sister, and Alfred Lammel, the mature young gentleman, in the light of a brother. Twemlow has asked him whether he went to school as a junior with Alfred? He has answered, not exactly. Apostrophe whether Sophronia was adopted by his mother? He has answered, not precisely so. Apostrophe Twemlow's hand has gone to his forehead with a lost air. But, 2 or 3 weeks ago, Twemlow, sitting over his newspaper, and over his dry toast and weak tea, and over the stable yard in Duke Street, St. James, received a highly perfumed cocked hat and monogram from Mrs. Veneering, entreating her dearest Mr. T, if not particularly engaged that day, to come like a charoning soul, and make a fourth at dinner with dear Mr. Podsnap, for the discussion of an interesting family topic. The last three words doubly underlined and pointed with a note of admiration. And Twemlow replying, not engaged, and more than delighted, apostrophe goes, and this takes place. My dear Twemlow, apostrophe says Veneering, your ready response to Anastasia's unceremonious invitation is truly kind, and like an old friend. You know our dear friend Podsnap? Apostrophe, Twemlow ought to know the dear friend Podsnap who covered him with so much confusion, and he says he does know him, and Podsnap reciprocates. Apparently, Podsnap has been so wrought upon in a short time, as to believe, that he has been intimate in the house many years. In the friendliest manner he is making himself quite at home with his back to the fire, executing a statuette of the Colossus at Rhodes. Twemlow has before noticed in his feeble way how soon the Veneering guests become infected with the Veneering fiction. Not, however, that he has the least notion of its being his own case. Our friends, Alfred and Sophronia, apostrophe pursues veneering the veiled prophet. Our friends Alfred and Sophronia, you will be glad to hear, my dear fellows, are going to be married. As my wife and I make it a family affair, the entire direction of which we take upon ourselves, of course our first step is to communicate the fact to our family friends. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thinks Twemlow, with his eyes on Podsnap. Then there are only two of us, and he's the other. Apostrophe, I did hope, apostrophe, Veneering goes on, to have had Lady Tippins to meet you, but she is always in request, and is unfortunately engaged. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thinks Twemlow, with his eyes wandering. Then there are three of us, and she's the other. Apostrophe, Mortimer Lightwood, apostrophe, resumes Veneering, whom you both know, is out of town. But he writes, in his whimsical manner, that as we ask him to be bridegroom's best man, when the ceremony takes place, he will not refuse, though he doesn't see what he has to do with it. Apostrophe, oh. Apostrophe, apostrophe, thinks Twemlow, with his eyes rolling. Then there are four of us, and he's the other. Apostrophe, Boots and Brewer, apostrophe, observes Veneering, whom you also know, I have not asked today, but I reserve them for the occasion. Apostrophe, then, apostrophe, thinks Twemlow, with his eyes shut. There are sigh apostrophe, but here collapses, and does not completely recover until dinner is over, and the analytical has been requested to withdraw. We now come, apostrophe, says Veneering, to the point, the real point, of our little family consultation. Sophronia, having lost both father and mother, has no one to give her away. Apostrophe, give her away yourself, apostrophe, says Podsnap. My dear Podsnap, no. For three reasons. Firstly, because I couldn't take so much upon myself, when I have respected family friends to remember. Secondly, because I am not so vain as to think that I look the part. Thirdly, because Anastasia is a little superstitious on the subject, and feels averse to my giving away anybody until baby is old enough to be married. Apostrophe, what would happen if he did? Apostrophe, apostrophe, Podsnap inquires of Mrs. Veneering. My dear Mr. Podsnap, it's very foolish I know, but I have an instinctive presentiment that if Hamilton gave away anybody else first, he would never give away baby. Apostrophe, thus Mrs. Veneering, with her open hands pressed together, and each of her eight aquiline fingers looking so very like her one aquiline nose, that the brand new jewels on them seem necessary for distinction's sake. But, my dear Podsnap, apostrophe, quoth Veneering, there is a trite friend of our family who, I think and hope you will agree with me, Podsnap, is the friend on whom this agreeable duty almost naturally devolves. That friend, apostrophe, saying the words, as if the company were about 150 in number, is now among us. That friend is Twemlow. Apostrophe, certainly. Apostrophe, apostrophe, from Podsnap. That friend, apostrophe, Veneering repeats with greater firmness, is our dear good Twemlow. And I cannot sufficiently express to you, my dear Podsnap, the pleasure I feel in having this opinion of mine, and Anastasia so readily confirmed by you, that other equally familiar and trite friend who stands in the proud position, I mean who proudly stands in the position, or I ought rather to say, who places Anastasia and myself in the proud position of himself standing in the simple position of baby's godfather. Apostrophe, and, indeed, Veneering is much relieved in mind to find that Podsnap betrays no jealousy of Twemlow's elevation. So, it has come to pass that the spring van is strewing flowers on the rosy hours, and on the staircase, and that Twemlow is surveying the ground on which he is to play his distinguished part tomorrow. He has already been to the church, and taken note of the various impediments in the aisle, under the auspices of an extremely dreary widow who opens the pews, and whose left hand appears to be in a state of acute rheumatism, but is in fact voluntarily doubled up to act as a money box. And now veneering shoots out of the study wherein he is accustomed, when contemplative, to give his mind to the carving and gilding of the pilgrims going to Canterbury, in order to show Twemlow the little flourish he has prepared for the trumpets of fashion, describing how that on the 17th instant, at St. James Church, the Reverend Blank Blank, assisted by the Reverend Dash Dash, united in the bonds of matrimony, Alfred Lammel Esquire, of Sackville Street, Piccadilly, to Sophronia, only daughter of the late Horatio Akersham Esquire, of Yorkshire. Also how the fair bride was married from the house of Hamilton Veneering Esquire, of Stoconia, and was given away by Melvin Twemlow Esquire, of Duke Street, St. James, second cousin to Lord Snigsworth, of Snigsworthy Park. While perusing which composition, Twemlow makes some opaque approach to perceiving, that if the Reverend Blank Blank, and the Reverend Dash Dash fail, after this introduction, to become enrolled in the list of Veneering's dearest and oldest friends, they will have none but themselves to thank for it. After which, appears Sophronia, whom Twemlow has seen twice in his lifetime, to thank Twemlow for counterfeiting the late Horatio Akersham Esquire, broadly of Yorkshire. And after her, appears Alfred, whom Twemlow has seen once in his lifetime, to do the same, and to make a pasty sort of glitter, as if he were constructed for candlelight only, and had been let out into daylight by some grand mistake. And after that, comes Mrs. Veneering, in a pervadingly aquiline state of figure, and with transparent little knobs on her temper, like the little transparent knob on the bridge of her nose, worn out by worry and excitement, apostrophe as she tells her dear Mr. Twemlow, and reluctantly revived with Curacoa by the analytical. And after that, the bridesmaids begin to come by railroad from various parts of the country, and to come like adorable recruits enlisted by a sergeant not present. For, on arriving at the Veneering Depot, they are in a barrack of strangers. So, Twemlow goes home to Duke Street, St. James, to take a plate of mutton broth with a chop in it, and a look at the marriage service, in order that he may cut in at the right place tomorrow. And he is low, and feels it dull over the livery stable yard, and is distinctly aware of a dint in his heart, made by the most adorable of the adorable bridesmaids. For, the poor little harmless gentleman once had his fancy, like the rest of us, and she didn't answer as she often does not, and he thinks the adorable bridesmaid is like the fancy as she was then, which she is not at all, and that if the fancy had not married someone else for money, but had married him for love, he and she would have been happy, which they wouldn't have been, and that she has a tenderness for him still, whereas her toughness is a proverb, brooding over the fire, with his dried little head in his dried little hands, and his dried little elbows on his dried little knees, Twemlow is melancholy. No adorable to bear me company here. Apostrophe apostrophe thinks he. No adorable at the club. A waste, a waste, a waste, my Twemlow. Apostrophe and so drops asleep, and as galvanic starts all over him. Bedham's next morning, that horrible old lady Tippins, relict of the late Sir Thomas Tippins, knighted in mistake for somebody else by His Majesty King George III, who, while performing the ceremony, was graciously pleased to observe, what, who, why, apostrophe, begins to be dyed and varnished for the interesting occasion. She has a reputation for giving smart accounts of things, and she must be at these people's early, my dear, to lose nothing of the fun. Whereabout in the bonnet and drapery announced by her name, any fragment of the real woman may be concealed, is perhaps known to her maid. But you could easily buy all you see of her, in Bond Street. Or you might scalp her, and peel her, and scrape her, and make two Lady Tippinses out of her, and yet not penetrate to the genuine article. She has a large gold eyeglass, has Lady Tippins, to survey the proceedings with. If she had one in each eye, it might keep that other drooping lid up, and look more uniform. But perennial youth is in her artificial flowers, and her list of lovers is full. Mortimer, you wretch, apostrophe says Lady Tippins, turning the eyeglass about and about, where is your charge, the bridegroom? Apostrophe apostrophe, give you my honor, apostrophe returns Mortimer, I don't know, and I don't care. Apostrophe, miserable. Is that the way you do your duty? Apostrophe, beyond an impression, that he is to sit upon my knee, and be seconded at some point of the solemnities, like a principal at a prize fight, I assure you I have no notion what my duty is, apostrophe returns Mortimer. Eugene is also in attendance, with a pervading air upon him of having presupposed the ceremony to be a funeral, and of being disappointed. The scene is the vestry room of St. James Church, with a number of leathery old registers on shelves that might be bound in Lady Tippins's. But, hark! A carriage at the gate, and Mortimer's man arrives, looking rather like a spurious Mephistopheles, and an unacknowledged member of that gentleman's family, whom Lady Tippins, surveying through her eyeglass, considers a fine man, and quite a catch. And of whom Mortimer remarks, in the lowest spirits, as he approaches, I believe this is my fellow, confound him. Apostrophe apostrophe more carriages at the gate, and lo the rest of the characters. Whom Lady Tippins, standing on a cushion, surveying through the eyeglass, thus checks off. Bride, 45 if a day, 30 shillings a yard, veil 15 pound, pocket handkerchief a present. Bridesmaids, kept down for fear of outshining bride, consequently not girls, 12 and 6 a yard, veneerings flowers, snub-nosed one rather pretty, but too conscious of her stockings, bonnets £3.10. Twemlow, blessed release for the dear man, if she really was his daughter, nervous even under the pretense that she is, well he may be. Mrs. Veneering, never saw such velvet, say £2,000 as she stands, absolute jeweler's window, father must have been a pawnbroker, or how could these people do it? Attendant unknowns, pokey. Apostrophe, ceremony performed, register signed, Lady Tippins escorted out of sacred edifice by Veneering, carriages rolling back to Stacconia, servants with favors and flowers, Veneering's house reached, drawing rooms most magnificent. Here, the Podsnaps await the happy party. Mr. Podsnap, with his hairbrushes made the most of, that imperial rocking horse, Mrs. Podsnap, majestically skittish. Here, too, are Boots and Brewer, and the two other buffers, each buffer with a flower in his buttonhole, his hair curled, and his gloves buttoned on tight, apparently come prepared, if anything had happened to the bridegroom, to be married instantly. Here too, the bride's aunt and next relation, a widowed female of a Medusa sort, in a stony cap, glaring petrifaction at her fellow creatures. Here too, the bride's trustee, an oilcake-fed style of business gentleman with moony spectacles, and an object of much interest. Veneering launching himself upon this trustee as his oldest friend, which makes 7, Twemlow thought, and confidentially retiring with him into the conservatory, it is understood that Veneering is his co-trustee, and that they are arranging about the fortune. Buffers are even overheard to whisper third tie thou sand poo nds, with a smack and a relish suggestive of the very finest oysters. Pokey unknowns, amazed to find how intimately they know Veneering, pluck up spirit, fold their arms, and begin to contradict him before breakfast. What time Mrs. Veneering, carrying baby dressed as a bridesmaid, flits about among the company, emitting flashes of many-colored lightning from diamonds, emeralds, and rubies. The analytical, in course of time achieving what he feels to be due to himself in bringing to a dignified conclusion several quarrels he... Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.